instead of for me pushing my agenda and my favorite wines, it's more going, how can I elevate your experience? Like, why are you here tonight? And yes, if you want an amazing food and wine experience, I'm going to offer that to you. But if you don't want to talk to me, that's cool as well. Like, I feel like that's where I'm at now. I'm like, how am I going to make this the most seamless experience for you and not intimidate you as well?
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Food and wine matches that work are greater than the sum of their parts. More than something delicious to eat, more than a glass of something nice. Often they're about how they facilitate an experience. But how does one deliver those experiences that formed fond memories and a yearning to do it again? Luella Matthews is the head sommelier of Bebo Wine Bar in Sydney. Luella, how are you going?
Good. How are you, Anthony?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. You grew up started in the country in Orange, New South Wales. What drew you to hospitality and that sort of front of house experience?
I started like any kind of normal student, leaving high school thinking I had to go to university. So I was studying psychology at Charles Sturt and then did a little trip up to Armidale as well and did a little bit of study up there. But I always, no matter what, I had to fund my education and so I had to work in restaurants. So I was really fortunate. When I was in Orange, I was looking for a job and I was walking around getting rejected by all these really bad cafes. And then I walked into Lolo Rudini, which is a one-hat restaurant in Orange, with Simon and Leah, and I just went in with a fresh attitude and they decided to give me a chance. And, I've been so grateful ever since, because before I kind of worked there, I was the fussiest eater. You know, I was a normal 18-year-old, just drank vodka Red Bulls. And I pretty much just kind of dove into it and really wanted to impress them. And I think, in anything that I do, I hate not knowing the answer to anything. So when I was there, I was like, I studied all the ingredients because I'd never heard of them, started looking at the wines and went from there. And then, so I was kind of still studying, going to and through. And then there was another restaurant called Racine, which unfortunately isn't there anymore. It was a beautiful restaurant out at Luckily Vineyard. And I was working for them part-time and the manager was leaving. And at this stage, I was like, I don't want to study psych anymore. I found out that it was more kind of science-focused and I'm a little bit more on the artsy, yin and yang side. And they were like, the manager was leaving and they were like, do you want to be the manager? I was 20, I think 22 at the time. And I was like, yeah, of course I want to be. Look at that pay packet. I was like, yeah, that'd be great. And that was owned by Sean and Willa. They still own Racine Bakery in town, which is incredible. And they took me to Key and they were like, this is three-hat restaurant. This is fine dining. This is what, we're not going to get three hats, but this is the style of service that we want. And so I just was, that was an incredible experience to go there anyway, especially in that little tower. And so from then on, I remember coming back. I took, that's when everything was really trendy, like you had nothing on the table. So I would like just put the tablecloths on. I'd iron the tablecloths. This is at like 12, in this tiny little restaurant in Orange, outside of Orange. And we did degustation and a la carte as well, but we got our one hat, I think, 3 years in a row while I was managing there. And then Sean and Willa were amazing. They were the ones that kind of, I was like, I don't know what to do, if I should study business. And they both kind of sat me down and said, hey, like, we'd love you to stay with us forever, but you're really amazing at this and hospitality is a real career. You probably should go to Sydney. They're like, don't leave us. I remember when I resigned, they're like, we know. I was like, I know. And yes, and then I moved to the big city and went shopping, I guess. Was so nervous. Like, I'd been managing a restaurant for 3 years, and then moving, you know, Sydney was a whole different ball game, because I was almost like a self-taught waiter and manager, and just kind of learnt from observing in other restaurants and observing other managers.
Well, Orange has amazing wineries and some amazing restaurants, and some of them you listed. What's some of the seminal experiences that you had with wine early on that sort of led you to where you are now?
The one of the most memorable experiences would be with Stephen and Rhonda Doyle out at Bloodwood. So they're one of the first wineries. But their story is just incredible. They're like ex-librarians, you know, travelled around Europe, fell in love with wine. And I remember going there, not really knowing much, but they took me around the whole winery. But they were the first people to teach me about terroir and minerality. So they really showed me the map. They're like, this is why we put Riesling on our schist soils because of this, and you can taste it now in the wine. And we put Merlot on clay, and we put Cabernet on gravel. And I hadn't really experienced that before, and I'll never, ever forget that. And I remember they used to have these booklets. They used to save all the labels, and they had, like, you know, Penfolds Grange, $6, you know, like 1982 Chateau Petrus, like $40. I was like, and that would have been so, you know, whoa, that's so expensive. But they were just, you know, they immersed themselves in wine. Like, everything they talked about was wine related, and they were really good cooks as well. And they always did these, you know, if we ever did wine dinners or wine and food matches, they were really involved. So they were one of the first where I was like, okay, wine is really special. So the next winery would be Charlie and Loretta Svensson at DeSalis Winery, just because they came in, they were super ambitious, started their own sparkling project, which is, you know, incredibly expensive in its own right. But they also focused, they almost kind of introduced me to, like, premium French wines, but through their style. So they, you know, were obsessed with Burgundy, obsessed with Bordeaux. So they had Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and obsessed with Champagne as well. So I remember I would go there and they'd be like, you know, this is like Krug. I'm like, who's Krug? You know, this is what the bottle's like. This is why we do this. This is like, you know, and just listing all of these producers in my head, I was like, yeah, of course. And then I was like, okay, note to self, look that up when I get home. But yeah, they're pretty incredible as well. And then, of course, I've made a wine this year, in 2019. So when I was even younger, this is before I started working in restaurants. When I first moved to Orange, I started a friendship with a girl called Nadia Wallington, and she lived out on a winery. So as you do, she would stay at my house one weekend, then we'd stay at hers. And we would, you know, we'd be like 16. Her mum would be like, guys, can you help me with harvest? We would be brats and be like, oh, fine. Fine, we'll help you do pump overs. And now we're like, oh, can we make a wine? Thanks, Margaret. So of course we had a dinner, had a few wines, and we were like, let's do this. Let's make a wine together. So she was a bit more, I remember when we were at school, she's like, I want to study viticulture and winemaking. But she's incredible. I've learned so much of her, especially from this project. Like, Australian winemakers are incredible. Like, they're like lab rats, you know, how they can manipulate the wine. Sometimes, yes, maybe a little bit too far, but the little tweaks and the little nudges that they do that people don't realize, I learned so much. And she's incredible. She's traveled like everywhere, Napa, South Africa, Bordeaux, you name it, she's been there. So I still learn from her. Every time she comes down, I'm like, what's this? Why is this like this? You know, they've got such technical palates, whereas, you know, Some are more like artists. We'll interpret it. We'll be like, oh, this smells like this. We don't know why. Well, we do. We try to figure it out. But, you know, we kind of start with this is what it's like and then why is it like that? Whereas I feel like winemakers are like, they start from the bottom and then go to the top.
You worked at some amazing regional restaurants, but how different was it for you coming to Sydney and working in the restaurants in the city?
So it was very daunting, especially coming from Orange. I didn't really experience a lot of other cultures. So I remember, you know, I started at Rockpool and George, the OG Rockpool, back in the day. And, you know, there's Italians and French, and I just was so intimidated. I was like, oh, my God, I'm an uncultured Bogan from Orange. I don't even know how to say Bogan properly. And I'll just never forget, like, my first shift. So I was like, no, you can do this. Like, you've been a restaurant manager. And Silvio, this, you know, he's amazing experience, like, managed, like, you know, Michelin star restaurants, hotels. And I was carrying, you know, you start off as a food runner. And I was carrying the plates. And he's like, you're supposed to carry them on the other hand. I was like, what? And he's like, you're carrying them on the wrong side. I'm not left-handed or anything. I just taught myself that way. So for the next, like, 4 weeks, I had to, like, I was so mortified and so embarrassed, but I had to learn how to carry three plates again. It was incredibly humbling experience, but I was like, oh, my God, it was horrible. But, you know, I moved past it. But, you know, it's always those first 4 weeks in, like, a new job. You know, it's always pretty daunting. But then, you know, fell in love with it, fell in love with the place. You know, I always loved Neil's kind of philosophy. And the teams that he seems to bring together are always pretty incredible. And, you know, I stayed with Rockpool like 3.5-4 years and kind of moved around. Like, we moved to Bridge, then we moved to Bar and Grill. I moved to Bar and Grill, and I just, like, everything that I know about wine and about managing a wine program is through them, 100%. They just from everything, like, I always give, you know, if you've got a young sommelier who's like, where should I work first? And I'm like, you should always work for those big companies because you do everything there. You know, you learn how to catalog wines properly, you know, how to cost wines properly, you know, you just all the, instead of just knowing about wine, like, it's really important to have the knowledge, of course, but, you know, if you want to run a business one day, you have to learn all of those things. Does come at a price, but it's worth it. As long as you get out of it what you need, you know, it's the incredible experiences. And not to mention the crazy wines that you get to try that you would never be able to afford.
You've also completed Wine and Spirit Education Trust and also became a Court of Sommelier, Court of Master Sommeliers, Certified Sommelier. Tell us about what you got out of those experiences.
I think both of them go really well hand in hand. So if anybody is wondering what to do, if you're doing like your WSET level 3 and you're certified, they kind of cross over. So it's good just to tick both of those boxes. WSET for me is really good just to start the groundwork. Like, it's got a really nice frame. Because there's so much, like, the more you learn about wine, the more you realize that you have no idea. Whereas WSET's really nice at, like, breaking that down, and they're like, this is where you should start, and then you kind of add on as you go. Like, the amount of times I've studied a region, like, 5, 6, 7 times, and every time I learn something new, it's quite frustrating, isn't that? I was like, oh, it's almost, what's that Albert Einstein quote that's like, the definition of his insanity is doing the same thing over and over again. I'm like, that's literally what I'm doing. Whereas Court of Master Sommelier is certified, I think that's great. It really, like, pushes the nerve boundaries, you know, like, it's, you have to do a practical examination. It's very stressful. But, you know, being on the floor is really stressful in hospitality. You have to be on, you know, as soon as that first customer walks in, you have to be on the whole time. So I think it's, you know, it's a bit old school. Like, I actually really like the old school approach to, like, opening a bottle, putting, you know, the cork in the cork tray and presenting everything. And it's just nice. You know, you might, you know, I work in a casual wine bar now. And you might not use that every day, but it's just really nice to have that kind of foundation. And then you decide, you know, which parts are important for your program or not. But, yeah.
You've traveled all over the globe to go to different wine regions. What's been some real highlights for you?
Number one is Alsace. That was just incredible, like, food and wine matching, but just, you know, the concentration of Michelin star restaurants and the wine and the wine programs that they offer was just incredible. But also, like, the hospitality, they were just, everyone's so lovely, they're so generous with their time, you know, visiting different vineyards. And then also, like, going to the local taverns and having, like, incredible food and wine matches. Like, I remember I didn't really understand Gewürztraminer for a really long time, which is like this really oily, very heavy, doesn't have a lot of acid, smells like Turkish delight. It's like this, it's great in a blind tasting because you're like, nothing else tastes like this in the world. But you're like, I don't understand why are you making it like this? And then I had like some spätzle and then some pork and sauerkraut. And I was like, oh, this is for sauerkraut. I was like, oh, I get it now. Like, sauerkraut's so like high in acid, it's vinegar. Like, it was such an incredible match. And I was like, I totally understand why. And even like their Rieslings, which I love, they're some of my favorite Rieslings in the world, but they're quite rich. And when you eat the food there, you're like, everything's really rich. And, you know, it needs, they kind of complement each other. And it just totally made more sense. So I think I had a lot of like, oh my God moments there. And then the second one would be Japan was just incredible, even though maybe wine, it's a funny one because it was wine experiences, even though they don't make much wine there, but it was more like the food, I mean, is always incredible, but we, everywhere we went had like a vintech. I thought it was incredible. And their approach to wines, like, I mean, maybe that's just their approach. You know, they just, everything was done with such care. So we went to so many different wine stores. It was just, I was like, this is insane. Like, the amount of different wine stores that offered different, you know, beverage offerings. Like, we had some of the best wines in the world in Japan. And we're like, this is insane. And everything, I remember we were tasting, like, you know, we had those really old, like 61 Barolos and things like that. And we're like, oh, this is a risk. But it's, I mean, it was a lot cheaper than in Australia. So we're like, let's just do it. Let's risk it. But because you can tell that, you know, everything's been cellared properly and been taken care of, and the way that, you know, they've taken care of the wine, like, all the wines were just incredible. It was insane. We spent a lot of money, but we saved a lot of money over there because I was like, we'd never buy this in Australia because it's too expensive.
Well, what makes a great food and wine experience, and how do you approach that?
I approach it, I think it's really important. It's hard going from like a fine dining restaurant where everything's food and wine matching and then going into a bar setting, well, restaurant and bar setting. So we do matching wines as well. And the wine list is around 400 bins at the moment. I say at the moment because I'm like, I would like to increase that if my boss is listening. But for me now is really, it's so much about reading the table. Like, I feel I've really switched. I remember when we first opened Bebo, and, you know, I was 5 years younger. I was like late 20s, really wanted to prove myself. And I had like you almost have like a few agendas. Like, I was like, I really want to push Portuguese wine because I think it's incredible. And I had chefs Portuguese, you know, I want to push this. I want to push that. I like skin contact, you know, biodynamic organic, blah, blah, blah. But now instead of that, of course, I have my favorite wines, my favorite wine regions. But more now, I just kind of took a step back. And honestly, I think it's from COVID. The amount of stuff that we learned at Bebo from COVID was just incredible. And when just before we reopened, like I literally had to rewrite a new list. But I think it was one of the best experiences that I've had because it made me go, okay, let's actually look at our customer, look at our client base. And so instead it's more, I look at the table and I'm like, okay, let's have a look. I've got three girls, they're catching up. They don't want to talk to me, but they don't want to talk to us, but they're here because they love the atmosphere. So let's get them something that, you know, something they actually want to drink. Like, you know, if they want a dry Provence rosé, no worries. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, that's your experience tonight. And then I've got a two and it's a special occasion and they want a little bit, you know, more interaction, then I'm going to cater for them. And then you've got, you know, four businessmen who want to impress their clients. You know, it's more about, instead of for me pushing my agenda and my favorite wines, it's more going, how can I elevate your experience? Like, why are you here tonight? And yes, if you want an amazing food and wine experience, I'm going to offer that to you. But if you don't want to talk to me, that's cool as well. Like, I feel like that's where I'm at now. I'm like, how am I going to make this the most seamless experience for you and not intimidate you as well? Like, I don't want you to come into the wine bar and freak out. We're notorious. We have so many first dates. If you ever want to take someone on a first date, take them to Bebo. It's the best. We're experienced at it. We've got amazing bar seating. I love it. We always love it. We've even got like a little code for our first daters. We're like, just let them be for a while. Don't scare them. But yeah, I think that's where I'm at when it comes to. Oh, there you go.
You've been with Bebo since it opened. Tell us about how that started for you and what it was like creating that list for your first list for the first time.
It was so much fun, first of all. It just happened so organically. It was really bizarre. So I was working at Rockpool and Jose and Jonathan. So you've got a few owners, but the main ones. So Jose's our executive chef. Who also owns Fisher Petersham and Sweet Bellem Cake Boutique. And then Jonathan, who's a restaurant manager. So they're both owners. And they're looking for a sommelier. I love when you meet with somebody to like a sneaky job interview. So we went at a sneaky steak at Chop House across the road. You know, I felt like I had to put the black glasses on. I was like, oh, no one sees me. They were like, we need a head sommelier. I was like, who knows how to do this? So I was like, yep. And one of the other owners has his own private cellar. They're like, we need somebody to catalog that and be able to price that. And, you know, I'd been looking after David Doyle's wines for the last year. So I was like, oh, like, what has he got? He's like, you know, yeah, easy, easy. You know, he's like, lots of classic Aussie. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's really easy. And then Jose was like, oh, and I, you know, do you like Portuguese wines? And poor Jose just opened this can of worms. I was like, Portuguese? And I just like listed all the regions, all the sub-regions, Madeira, Portugal. And he was like, in the end, he's like, all right, you know Portuguese wine. He's like, you know more than me. I was like, yeah. It's like, not hard, no. And then, yeah, they were so supportive. I had to come up with a concept, but all of the owners just were like, do you think, you know? It was pretty funny because there's five owners. So we've got, I call them three silent, not so silent partners who are lovely. And, but they kind of just really encouraged me and, you know, I kind of sent them a draft. I said they're only because they were all recommending because they all love wine. And I was like, you could only recommend me three wineries each because, you know, I was getting all these emails going, oh, this wine's really good. And I was like, all right, guys, let's just chill out. so they were just – it was just really fun constructing. I mean, the most important thing about a list, like if you're doing a new list, is just budget. That's the hardest part is you're just really like, okay, how much can you spend that first month, and then you go from there. So I've been doing a lot of consulting, and that's, you know, just trying to fit everything into that box and trying to, you know, almost cross all go across all boards and make sure that you're kind of representing everything, depending on the list. But it started there. It's so cute. Like, I look back at my old lists and I'm like, oh, so adorable. And I'm like, oh, look at that. You know, if you talk to any Somme, it's like the spelling mistakes, you know, the common ones, like Marsan, Rusan, because Rusan's got two S's and two N's. Doesn't make any sense. You know, you see, like, I remember one of my old mentors, Richard Healy, who was the Bev director at Rockpool at the time. He came in and I was like, no. I was like, no, don't tell me. I was like, he's like, look at this spelling mistake. I was like, oh, I'm so annoyed. But, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. But it's more, I guess, it's fun to write it, but to see the evolution of it is just, like, is really incredible. And I think it's, like, it's the more I think about it, because we've been open for 5 years now, the more I'm like, I think about other sommeliers and what other sommeliers have been in a position for 5 years to see their list evolve like that. You know, in a small operation, like, it really has taken 5 years to kind of get where it's at. And I was like, unless there's a, you know, there's a couple of people who've stayed in roles, but we do tend to hop around. Whereas I think, you know, maybe that my owners knew that I just, because I had ownership of the list from the get-go, that it's almost for me to kind of leave it. It'll be really, if I ever do, I'll probably be there in 20 years. but it'll be really hard if I ever have to let it go, because it's, you know, it's my baby.
There's an inability for all of us to travel internationally at the moment, and you've been to many wine regions. How important are those wine experiences for young sommeliers to get out there and travel the world and go to these wineries?
Really important, like super, super important. I just think it's with everything, like I'm actually starting my diploma again, started my diploma with Wesset. And I've got an exam. I'm doing Quartermaster Sommeliers Advanced again in August, and just restudying everything. So I remember studying all these things before I travelled, before I met winemakers regularly. And, you know, it's just to sit there and study and know the knowledge to, you know, I just think travelling is really important. But tasting, it's a catch. It's in between traveling and tasting wine all the time, which is, you know, really hard thing to do. Sorry, guys, you're going to have to taste wine all the time. but it's just understanding, as soon as you go overseas, and that's what I love. Like, I remember tasting American wine all the time. You know, I just don't really get it. And then going to America and being like, okay, I totally get it now. I understand what your ethos is, like where your inspiration came from. Like, I get it. So I think it's, you just have those oh my God hallmark moments. So if you can afford to do it, do it. Do it when you're studying, because then you can claim it as you can claim it as educational.
Well, you've released your first wine that you did in collaboration with your friend Nadia Wellington that you mentioned a bit earlier. Tell us about what it was like creating that wine and what it actually what it came out like.
So a lot of fun. The first vintage was 2019. It was her 15-year anniversary for Wellington Wines, so we thought it'd be very special to kind of do it from there. And, you know, we've been friends for so long and we spent so much time there. The vineyard itself is really special. People don't realise a lot of New South Wales wine, people buy a lot of wine from this vineyard because it's been biodynamic organic for 8 years. And it has all these, like, different quirky varietals. So, I mean, you've got classics like Chardonnay and Cabernet and things like that. But they've got Bushvine Grenache, they've got Cab Franc, Tempranillo. It does feel almost like when you go there during summer, it feels like a kind of Spanish continental kind of climate. So we had to decide on what varietal So we're either going to do Cab Franc or 100% Merved. And I really love Adam Foster's 100% Merveds from Heathcote. And I've thought it was kind of similar, like it gets quite hot, but it does have those cooling winds at night. And I really love his wines, and they were kind of the inspiration for me behind that. And then Nadia totally agreed. She was like, nobody's, you know, making 100% Merved, you know, unless it's like Barossa or Heathcote, and that's it. And we both love Shiraz and like cool climate Shiraz. So we're kind of going, let's kind of make it like that. And the first, it was a really hard vintage. It was like super hot, which I learnt when I thought when it was super hot, I was like, oh, it'll just like ripen really quickly. And it'll just be like a hot vintage. Like you'll feel it'll be higher in alcohol, you know, really fruity and almost like a fruit bomb. But I've learnt that the vine just shuts down, just has a dummy spit, and it's just like, nah, like I don't want to make anything. So it was really interesting to kind of go, okay, like it was really hard. You're like, you can feel the sugars are rising, but the phenological ripeness, like this, isn't there yet. So we had to do like four different picks. Luckily, it cooled down a little bit just at the end. So we had to do four different picks. So the first pick we did for the acidity and the brightness and the freshness. Then we did a middle pick and did two batches. So one was like 100% whole bunch, which basically we threw bunches into a barrel and you wrap it in cling film. And yeah, it looks really weird. And then you kind of give it a stomp and that adds aromatic complexity. And then the last one we picked was for like the alcohol, the fleshiness, you know, the mid palate. And we had to throw, this is when it got really fun, is when you blend all of those things. So one of the barrels we had many arguments over, which I think it's very good to learn how to, you know, healthy arguments are great. And we had heaps of arguments about that barrel. So we ended up throwing that one away because it was too volatile. And Nadia, she's winemaking background. So for her, any wine faults is, she's going to hate me that I'm saying this, but going out for dinner with her, I'm like, what's wrong with this wine? I'm like, is it bready? Is it volatile? Is it cork? Like she's one of those people who has like razor sharp cork taint senses. I can get it if it's like, you know, really easily identifiable, but she'll be like, this is cork taint. I'm like, where? She's like, the palate's really stripped up. I'm like, oh, I'm not taking you anywhere. But you know, she's got a super palate, which is amazing, and amazing for, you know, amazing for a winery as well, because she can pick up on these things. So we had to get rid of that one. There was another barrel which she also kind of didn't really like. And I was like, no, we need this to kind of lift up the other aromas, otherwise it's going to get too big. So I had to bring, I think I brought like four different Merveds, and we did this kind of benchmark tasting. And one of them was Adam Foster's. And I was like, look at this wine. She was like, okay. So it's going really well. We didn't make anything in 2020 because of the fires. And then this year was just too easy. Like the growing season was super even. So we just picked it once. When we called, she was like, how do you want to make it this year? And I was like, sorry, this is really technical. But I was thinking de-stem but whole berry and then a little bit of whole bunch, and she was like, oh, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, awesome. Like this year we were like, we're totally on the same page, and we learnt from that 19 vintage. And this year they've also bought a vineyard in Orange, so we're making and it had some Italian varietals in there, so we're making a 100% anise as well, which again, we're just super on, like, just on the same page. We were like, we're gonna make it like this, yep, awesome, tick tick. It's nearly ready for bottling, so I just have to get my to get my shit together and start selling it. I sell it at Bebo. It's in a few other. It's in like it's at PS40 in the city. It's at Native Drops. It's at Five Ways, but it really is just lots of like calling friends, being like, "Hey, do you like this wine? Do you want to list it? Thanks." Because I'm not a very good hustler when it comes to that sort of thing, but I'm trying to get better.
Well, with an inability to travel overseas at the moment, everyone's sort of traveling around Australia. Is there any kind of wine regions for you that really stand out at the moment that people should be looking into?
So the first one, I mean, New South Wales would definitely be Orange. I mean, I'm from there, but it's just got amazing, even the food scene's just incredible now. We've actually got cocktail bars now as well. And just the winery, the experiences, like there's a lot of new wineries who are creating new experiences, which is really cool, like Nashdale Lane. I know do glamping and things like that. Another region we got to go visit before Melbourne went into lockdown again, but was Beechworth, was just incredible. And the Macedon Ranges as well. We did like a little kind of circular trip. And it was, they were just so much fun to visit. And almost like, maybe I'm getting older, but learning about Australian history, like going to Beechworth and then, you know, learning that, you know, the vines were there from, you brought there from when it was the gold rush. And, you know, I remember traveling around these areas when I was really young with mum and dad and all the kids in the car. And finding it so boring. And now I'm like, oh, this is really interesting. I'm like, I am getting old. but those little pocket, and I think I really love them because they are little pocket regions that, you know, they're really community focused. It's not like, you know, big tourism board, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that as well, but for unique, those kind of unique experiences of, you know, sitting down with the winemaker rather than just going to a giant winery and, you know, someone kind of serving you who, yes, of course they're educated and they learn about wine, but they were really incredible just kind of hopping around those little wineries and just seeing the little nuances. Even, you know, at Beechworth, we're at the top seeing like Tessa Brown at Schmaltzer and Brown, which is like you could feel it's cooler, and then just driving down to where like Castagna and Giocondra, and it immediately got warmer. Just like that kind of stuff is really cool.
Well, Luella, I'm sure that we could take a deep dive and hear a lot more about your wine adventures. Perhaps we'll have to catch up again down the track. We've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds today to share your story. Please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.